Thank you for coming to our special festival tonight. Yes, it is a fact that real yoga, real enlightenment, brings you to the experience of how everything emanates from the Supreme. In the ancient Sanskrit language, we have the very precise code. That means essential truth spoken concisely and eloquently. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now that you have the human form of life, you must become enlightened. You must become self-realized. Why? Because you spent countless births in countless types of bodies on countless planets trying to enjoy by dominating nature. By now, we should be frustrated. By now, we should understand the limitations of our body and mind and intellect. Therefore, now is the time to be Krishna conscious. Why Krishna conscious? Because Krishna means the origin of everything, especially pleasure. Krishna means the all-attractive reservoir of pleasure. As you saw in the play, yes, horror comes from the Supreme, but that horror is pleasurable, unlike the horror of this world. Now, of course, people go to horror movies because they want to enjoy being frightened. But a real horror, no one likes. No one likes a truly horrible situation. You may watch a movie about horror, but you don't want to experience horror yourself. But in the Supreme, the horror has beautiful, pleasurable effects. In the material world, in our material existence, horror has horrible effects. In this way, you can learn the first fact about the spiritual reality, the spiritual world. You can understand that all variety is present in the spiritual world in perfection, whether it's horror, pain, pleasure, everything has a blissful, enlightening effect. Whereas in material existence, all the varieties are transitory, they come and go, and most of them you don't want. You don't want to experience all the varieties of material existence. There are days when you want hot water and not cold water. There are days when you want cold water and not hot water. This is the world of duality. Pain, pleasure, poverty, wealth, sickness, health. These various varieties baffle us. Love, hate, beauty, ugliness. But in the spiritual world, all the varieties are there in perfection. Therefore, even something as horror can be completely spiritually enlightening. Because you're dealing with the spiritual energy, not the material energy. The material energy has troublesome, miserable effects. Sooner or later, we understand that. But in the spiritual world, as Krishna informs us in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, all the varieties are there in perfection with ever-increasing pleasure. This information is given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. For those topmost yogis who want to move beyond the body, beyond the mind, beyond the intelligence, to the core of pure consciousness, the soul. So please think about that. Yes, it's the year 2007. So many of you recognize the lyrics to this song. But please think about it. Is this the paradise that we want? No heaven, no hell. All the people living for today. What do you think? No countries. Nothing to kill or die for. And no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. Could it happen like that? Is it possible? Everyone can just do whatever they want and there'll be peace. Everyone just living for today. Actually, according to the ancient Vedic literature of India, that's animal life. You just live for today. The animals are expert in doing that. They don't need philosophies or songs. They just do it. Now. How do I go to the next one? Okay. Well, maybe some of you out there are dreamers too. Maybe some of you out there want to join in that world. Imagine no possessions. Well, I don't think the original singer of this song subscribed to no possessions. He had a lot of fame, and someone became very envious of him and terminated his life. That is the problem with material existence. When you get something, whether it's money or fame, someone else doesn't get, and they become envious, and they want to make you suffer. No need for greed or hunger. Well, as long as people cannot control their mind and senses, there's going to be greed. The hunger problem in the world is artificial. For example, if on just 2% of the arable land in the USA, just 2% of the arable land, and not prime growing land, but desert land, if on just 2% of the landmass of the USA, and you can use deserts, if they grew spirulina, there'd be no hunger problems in the world. You say, who wants to eat spirulina every day? But my point is to show you that the hunger problem of the world can easily be solved. Now, a question of whether your tongue doesn't like spirulina and you want a Big Mac or, you know, KFC or, you know, Flying Burrito Brothers or something. That's not the point. The point is, because of greed, from uncontrolled senses, you have poverty problems, you have hunger problems. As long as there's no organized program for teaching people yoga. What is real yoga? How to control the mind and senses. That's the beginning. Then real yoga concludes with understanding what is the supreme, what is Krishna. Krishna as the source of everything, especially as the source of all pleasure. So, if you share the dream as you see on the screen, are you the only one? You want to join in with that? So, this was the hope from 1971. I was in university then, and many people resonated with the lyrics of this song. And even today, 36 years later, almost everyone here has heard of this song. But I wonder if you ever looked at it analytically, as we did tonight. It's a sentiment that cannot be fulfilled, because there is no notion that we are responsible to laws of nature and we are responsible to higher consciousness, a supreme consciousness. There's no notion whatsoever. But look, we don't know who we are. We don't know where we came from. We don't know where we're going. We're going to live for now, and it's going to be peace. It's not about to happen. Didn't happen in 1971. It's not going to happen in 2007. We need spiritual knowledge, Krishna conscious knowledge. We need spiritual lifestyle, Krishna conscious lifestyle. How do we interact not only with the resources of this world, but how do we interact with other living entities? Do we just have peace for the human beings while we slaughter all the animals? How can everyone be treated properly? That can only happen when there is spiritual knowledge, when we understand our spiritual identity, when we understand the supreme spiritual identity, not simply as belief. I may believe that you exist. I may not, but still you exist. Let us take this guest here. Suppose I said to you, I believe you're here. Now, is that a substantial breakthrough? No way. You don't know anything about me. You don't know my likes, my dislikes. But I believe in you. I believe you're here. So what? Life's got to go on. So, simply religious belief that there is a supreme is not going to supply the dynamics you need for your life. You need actual spiritual experience and a process for verifying the existence of the supreme consciousness. That is what you require. Can we lower that a bit? So in this world that we've imagined, yes, we like to pick on the USA. I grew up there many years ago. Actually, I'm a New Zealand citizen. When people ask me where I'm from, I tell them I'm a refugee from the USA. So, yes, the number one consumerist nation. What's going on? You know, this is the result of living for today. Imagine this, imagine that. But what do you get? Anxiety. Now, of course, everyone likes to kick on Sam, but look at that facial expression. He's just bringing outside what's inside. I'm sure some of you are up on the latest social statistics for New Zealand in terms of mental health. So what happened to that world we're supposed to imagine? Where we live for today? There's no spiritual knowledge. There's just everyone trying to be happy and be one together, with no knowledge of how to interact with other living entities, other creatures, no knowledge of how to interact with nature, no knowledge of how to interact with the spiritual nature. Now, you heard during the drama this very important verse from the graduate study to Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto. Srimad Bhagavatam is known, in short, in New Zealand as the cantos, because it's divided into 12 cantos. So, remember the young son of Hiranyakashipu, the saintly son, the 5-year-old boy of such son of such a demoniac. Extraordinarily powerful father. The father asked him, what's the best thing you've learned in school today, my boy? Father took his son lovingly on his lap, smelling his head. That's a sign of affection in ancient Vedic culture of India. Naturally, the father didn't expect to hear anything very deep from a five-year-old boy. Maybe, you know, the equivalent, the Sanskrit equivalent of ABC. 1 + 1 = 2. And the father had specifically sent the son to school in order to become a terrorist leader. A terrorist leader so powerful that his boy would be able to control not only the Earth planet, but many planets at the same time. In other words, the father expected the son to be any modern despot that you can think of multiplied by 100. That was the path set by the father. So, when the father asked, what's the best thing you've learned in school? What did the five-year-old son reply? Oh, best of the asuras. That means a demon. A demon is someone who is simply focused on enjoying matter. From the transcendental, or the pure spiritual point of view, that is considered demoniac. You're in denial. You're extinguishing your spiritual identity and your spiritual aspirations and simply trying to squeeze pleasure out of matter. It's like trying to squeeze water out of this microphone. Oh, best of the asuras, king of the demons, as far as I've learned from my spiritual master, in other words, never mind what I learned in school, but let me tell you what I learned from my guru. You think, what's a five-year-old boy doing with a guru? Well, what's a five-year-old boy doing going to school? Let's see our cultural value judgments there. Your five-year-old boy came back to you and said, I've got a guru and I'm learning from him. He went, oh, my boy, you're too young for that. If the five-year-old boy comes back and says, you know, I went to school. Oh, very good, very good. You're going to make a lot of money in the future. Just see our cultural biases. Guru is not a fashion, not a fad. The guru speaks knowledge on behalf of the supreme source of everything, on behalf of Krishna. That's all. No inventions, no concoctions. And if the guru says, I am the supreme, you, according to the ancient Vedic texts of India, are allowed to give him a good kick in the head. Unfortunately, these days, when so-called gurus come and say, I am God and you are God, people hand over their checkbook. When actually, according to the ancient Vedic yoga texts, you should just give a kick right to the head. You can say, oh, you are God? Well, then I am the kicking God. So, as far as I've learned from my spiritual master, any person who has accepted a temporary body and temporary household life, because nowadays it's not even temporary household life. There's just random liaisons and, you know, experimental encounters. Any person who has accepted a temporary body and temporary household life is certainly embarrassed by anxiety because of having fallen in a dark well where there's no water but only suffering. Once you give up this position and go to the forest, that's the classic yogic response. Why go to the forest? Because in the forest you can live simply and peacefully and practice your spiritual life. Of course, now you can't do that. The forests are all disappearing. Anyway, that shows you what kind of civilization we have as compared to civilization in those times. More clearly, once you go to Vrindavan, that is a very special place that seems to be in India. But actually, the yogic texts explain that Vrindavan is nowhere in the material world. It just apparently is in India. It's a special place connected with Lord Krishna. Go to Vrindavan, where only Krishna consciousness is prevalent, and should thus take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're trying to create that place here, where you can come and learn how to take shelter, how to connect with the Supreme Source of everything, with Krishna. That is real yoga. But we have other things on our mind. This body. How do you look? How attractive are you? Who's looking at you? Will you remain youthful and fresh looking forever? Even at a young age, the anxiety sets in. Who is mother? Who is father? I'm just left with the TV. What's the point of this world? Some young kids do think like that. This is an instruction from the five-year-old boy you heard about to his schoolmates. This is what he's speaking at school, his first year of school. This is the kind of thing he's saying. Obviously, he's an advanced yogi from previous birth. Or maybe he's not even from this world. Maybe he's from the spiritual world and he's in this world for a mission. He's not attracted to the world of matter, but he's here to show us what is real knowledge? What is real lifestyle? So what does he say? One who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life, in other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service. That means bhakti yoga. Giving up all other engagements, the human body is the most rarely achieved. And although temporary, like other bodies, it is meaningful because in human life, one can perform devotional service, bhakti yoga. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service, bhakti yoga, can give one complete perfection. The five-year-old boy is telling you, don't delay, don't wait, don't put it off. This is your number one responsibility, your number one priority. And the earlier you do it, the better. We have any five-year-old boys here? How about six or seven? Huh? How old are you? 10. Oh. Prahlad Maharaj's point is, don't worry about the age of the body, whether young or old. From whatever point in life where you can understand the need for pure spiritual enlightenment, for Krishna consciousness, start. It's true, it's easier when you're young because you're not so molded. But as we get older and we become fossilized, it's hard to change. That's the disadvantage to squandering your youth in idle pursuits. So what do you mean, idle pursuits? You know, there's a lot of good stuff out there. It's very purposeful. All right, instead of idle pursuits, in which you waste your youth, we'll say predator pursuits. Yeah, that sounds more like it. Friday night, Saturday night comes, and you're on the prowl. Predator. Yeah. The men can relate to that. More than ever today, childhood is full of pain. For example, in the USA, in the past 40 years, childhood depression has increased by 300%. And then, here in Kiwi land, we know that the teen suicide rate is nothing to feel good about. What can you tell children like this when they have expressions like that? Or any child when they have such expressions, what can you say? Things are going to be all right. Don't worry. It'll all work out. Study hard. Become good at sports. What else? Go tramping. What can you say? What can parents tell their children these days? What substantial thing can parents say? Except, well, just try to follow your dream and just try to do what you feel and don't hurt anybody in the process. Right? It's as best as it gets. Yes? Yeah, it's as best as it gets. It's a tragedy. I think we need that fixed again. This is another instruction from Bhagavad Gita, the Bhakti Yoga classic and the main spiritual text of India. It's giving us a very pointed and very lucid instruction about pleasure, what it's not, and what it is. Generally, we think of pleasure in relation to our temporary bodily senses. But just as the body is temporary, so its senses are also temporary. And similarly, the objects of the senses are also temporary. Yes, this is Lord Krishna speaking, the Supreme Consciousness speaking. You are a tiny bit of consciousness and you can speak. Similarly, the Supreme Consciousness, Krishna, can also speak. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and end, and so the wise person does not delight in them. This reminds me of a discussion we had Friday night. Any of you here who were present Friday night? Yes. Yes, we had a very interesting audience. We had Florian from Berlin, Germany. He's studying his honors degree at Vic in, was it, physics? And then we have Srikant. He's doing his PhD in Vic in physics. Who else is here Friday? Yes. So, we discussed the statement. Is it better to be a wise person, like a Socrates of the modern age? Is it better to be a wise person and be dissatisfied than to be a pig and be satisfied? The pig lives for the now. Of course, we did discuss also that the example of a pig is kind of revolting. Maybe there was some other animal we could use that wouldn't produce such revolting reactions in us. For most people, pigs are good to eat, but they're not good to contemplate imitating their lifestyle. So, other creatures were brought forth, such as horses and birds, which seem more attractive to our romantic visualization. In fact, in surveys done of what people would like to be in their next life, most of them say horses or birds. Because they visualize to be free as a bird. You have that expression, you know, free as a bird. And a horse. The long hair flowing, galloping, very lean, muscular, beautiful body. And you just stay out in the pasture chewing grass and eat your oats in the stable. To be a wise person and dissatisfied should mean that you've realized the transitory or temporary nature of material pleasure and you're moving on. You're just temporarily dissatisfied because you're on your way to higher ground. But if you don't have any knowledge, any proper training, any proper information, actually you can't remain a wise person. Your senses will pull you down to the pig, I mean the horse platform. Party. Many of you can see yourself in this picture. Magic in the air. Friday night, Saturday night fever. Let the good times roll. Look at the looks on the face. It's living in the now. Imagine. Everyone's got a glass in their hand or a can in their hand, security blanket. Oh. Where is this stuff from? Must be from a distant land. Yes, the UK or something like that. Ah, what do you think? No, it's all from right here in Wellington on Courtenay Place. Herbal Heaven Shop. You can buy it. Strongest party pill. Super strong for super sensation. Extra feel. Extra real. Designed for dance floor demons. What are some of the customer comments? I can't read.
Discovered the meaning of life. Basically felt fantastic.
Oh, discovered the meaning of life. It's that easy. Just with a party fill. What about bliss? The number one party pill. What is it? Special loved up vibe. Bliss for what?
Smoother come down.
Bliss for a smoother come down. That's important. You know, what goes up comes down. And what are the customer comments?
It's all around a side effect of wanting to hug people.
What else?
Then you feel very sociable, lots of happy vibes.
Just see what science is giving us. A pill to match every mood you want. How easy it is to relate to others if you just take the right pill. And there's the result. World peace. World brotherhood. The balanced lifestyle. Those, yes. What's wrong with living life in this way? What's wrong with a good feeling? So what if it's not love, whatever that is? At least it's a good feeling, right? And if it's love, whatever that is, and it lasts for, you know, some months, all the better. Do you know what the scientific statistic is for the duration of romantic feelings? There's actually been a world study done, and they've come up with an average statistic of the duration of romantic feelings. Is anyone here in the midst of that? In the throes of romantic feelings? All right, you don't have to answer. We'll give you the straight facts here. The scientific calculation, world average, of the duration of romantic feelings. Are you ready? 17 months. And then it's over. Ah. I don't know what it is he's eating. It looks like a squid or a some poor creature. Certainly it's not vegetarian. We all know little kids, they can't control their senses. They just, you know, when they want ice cream, they want it. But how are the adults any different? Tell me. When the adults want something for their senses, they go out and get it. And that's what working is all about. Not only to provide for the individual senses, but to provide for the senses of others. Yes, in Wellington, we have a big cafe scene. People can gather and socialize and talk about things that will change the world. I don't know if you can see this clearly. She's getting a tattoo. You can see in the top right corner, she's at a tattoo parlor. And I don't know where he's putting the tattoo, but she's quite excited about it. This is going to really add to the quality of her life. Look at the look on her face. Don't seem to be moving past this point. Well, this is a backpacker's place, and they're getting the Kiwi experience. Last year, the average statistic for the amount of time New Zealanders spent watching television was 3.5 hours per day. This year, it is going up to 4 hours. The blinds are shut. Yeah. No question of anything outside. You know, the beautiful scenery of New Zealand, famous throughout the world. Now, the Kiwi experience is right there on the screen. Anyone ever been to, what is it called, Sky Tower, the casino there? Anyone? Look at that concentration. Talk about yoga samadhi. Look at that. They're just so focused. Look at that look. You know, nothing can, you know, distract them. If we could be that focused upon our Krishna consciousness, our spiritual enlightenment, how successful our life would be. Real human life, real human civilization means that there has to be a culture for training the mind so that the mind can be your friend, meaning the mind elevates you. It doesn't degrade you. The mind can take you one way or the other. The whole process of changing bodies, transmigration, reincarnation is powered by the mind with all its impressions and images. Therefore, real yoga comes to grips with the power of the mind. And the topmost yoga, bhakti yoga, takes your mind and attaches it to the Supreme, attaches it to Krishna. Which is easy because Krishna is the source of all pleasure. Once the mind is trained to recognize, to discriminate what is real pleasure, it naturally flows to Krishna.
I know you didn't think anyone would catch you, but you just slammed your door into my car. The least you can do is say you're sorry, lady.
You don't have to take that tone. It's not like I'm hurting your resale value.
I'm sorry. See? Like that.
Uh-huh.
Yes, when the senses have no program of control for higher purposes, they must drag down to lower purposes because life is dynamic. So you all recognize that, oh, this is ridiculous. But just see how powerful the mind is. Just see how powerful pride is. Just see how powerful identifying with the body is. They're identifying with their cars. I'm this car. You hit me. You slammed your door into my car. Similarly, my body. You've disrespected my body. You've disrespected my mind. Because people don't know who they are. They unnecessarily have all these miseries, which are superfluous, meaning they're external to you. But because you're lost in a dream world, identifying with the body and mind, you identify with all those miseries too. Ignorant of the spiritual identity, that unit of spiritual consciousness known as the soul, Partha Krishna, the Supreme Soul. The whole illusion can be dissipated like the sun dissipates the fog simply by the process of devotional service, known in Sanskrit as bhakti yoga, the ultimate connection. So we thank you all for your attention tonight. And we don't want to keep you too late, so therefore we're going to move right into our yes, our MC.
Thank you very much. Please let's have a very big hand for David.